Responding to the ruling, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu said Hamas was a murderous terrorist organization which should be put back on the list immediately. Should never have been taken off the list. The world should not have provided Hamas with $6 billion worth of funds after they started and lost the last war with Israel. But I'm not sure that there's any sanity left in the leadership of the world. When I began this program and I said that this program is devoted to those of you who have come to realize that the world's religious, political, military, and media institutions are corrupt and they cannot be fixed, that it is, this, we're not talking about some minor issues here. We're talking about the complete collapse of reason, the total destruction of man's capacity to think rationally. It's been going on for some time that humankind has been indoctrinated such that they can't think. And, you know, for a long time, the most effective tool in manipulating humankind was religion. The Romans imposed their religion to manipulate their subjects. Babylonians did. The Greeks did. Religion was the primary term, a technique used to impose a small people's will against a large group of people. And it renders the victim incapable of evaluating evidence and reason and executing a good judgment. It essentially deprives them of free will. That even if they have a choice, which in most religious institutions, they have no choice. I mean, there's no choice in Roman Catholicism. There is no choice in Islam. There was no choice as it relates to Imperial Rome or Babylon. Alexander the Great wasn't known for providing people with choices. The Pharaoh wasn't into free will either. That, for the most part, in these religiously inspired institutions and nations, there is no free will, there is no individual choice, but even for those who would otherwise cling to it, who would value it more than life, once they are beguiled by religion, which was the primary tool to render people stupid, they were incapable of evaluating evidence and reason. A religious person cannot evaluate evidence and reason. You can demonstrate conclusively and irrefutably that their religion is false and they can't process it. I mean, in 15 minutes, I can prove to a Muslim 10 different ways that it's impossible that the religion of Islam is truthful or reliable, and they would be absolutely incapable of processing any of it. Same thing is true with Christianity. And so we find ourselves now in a different situation where religion isn't ubiquitous in the West. There has been a new plan, and the new plan is called political correctness. It's the religion of man. It's socialism, communism, fascism. It's the ability to indoctrinate people so that they are now afraid or incapable of exercising good judgment. They've been indoctrinated not to be discerning, not to be rational, to have no concept of reason and rhetoric. And so I can only assume that what we're seeing in these political mandates and these judicial rulings is the result of that, of a society so corrupt that the product of that society can't think anymore, can't be moral, can't be discriminating, can't be discerning, can't be just. And so Netanyahu is fighting a losing game. He has truth on his side, but it doesn't matter. He has evidence on his side, but it doesn't matter. He has reason on his side, but it doesn't matter. Not today. And today, with those who would claim to be not religious, and my guess is that would be the majority that made this decision on this judicial panel, they are actually the most religious. Their religion is their politics. It's their scheme, whether it be fascism or socialism or communism or secularism, whatever it might be, that has become the driving force in their life. Israel, the United States, and several other nations have designated Hamas a terrorist organization due to its long record of attacks and its refusal to renounce violence. Hamas, which was founded in 1987, won Palestinian parliamentary elections in 2006 and reinforced its power in Gaza the following year after ousting its Fatah rivals. Its supporters see it as a legitimate resistance movement, resistance against Israel, of course, with whom it has fought for years. What are they resisting? Israel gave them Gaza. They're in Gaza. Israel gave them Gaza. What are they resisting? I mean, come on, think of it. What are they resisting? Nothing. Israel gave them Gaza. Israel could give Fatah the West Bank and it wouldn't matter. Israel gave Hamas Gaza and it didn't matter. So if you were to give the PLO the West Bank, why would you suppose that would matter? In December of 2001, the Council of the European Union, representing the governments of member states, adopted a common position and a regulation to combat terrorism. It established a list of designated entities and people whose funds could be frozen. Hamas's military wing, Is al-Din Qassam Brigades, was named on the initial list, and its political wing was added 2 years later. Hamas contested the decision, and on Wednesday, the EU's General Court found that it had been based not on acts examined and confirmed in decisions of competent authorities, but on factual imputations derived from the press and the Internet. If you don't see Hamas's rhetoric, Hamas's actions, Hamas's foundation, its charter, Hamas's history, Hamas's indoctrination of its children to hate and to be violent, its ongoing commitment to destroy Israel, using terror as the primary tactic, as a terror organization, you're incapable of rational thought. Hamas's deputy political leader, Musa Abu Marzouk, said the decision was a correction of a historical mistake. Hysterical may be correct. Hamas is a resistant movement, and it has a natural right, according to all international laws and standards, to resist the occupation. Occupation of what? Israel left Gaza. It isn't occupying Gaza. Occupation of what? Good grief. It is pathetic. You know, and the journalists will read that, listen to it, write it down, and not say, come on, that's ridiculous. Hamas has power in Gaza. That's where it has its seat of influence. That's what it controls. It's a living hellhole. There's nothing productive there. Nothing beneficial there. To say it's a parasite is unkind to parasites. The most repulsive people on earth live in Gaza. Insane. Demon-possessed. Sadistic. Just disgusting. How far humanity has fallen. No organization has the right to attack others, as Hamas constantly does. No international law supports reneging on international agreements, which Hamas does. No international law supports using your weapons to attack civilians, which is what Hamas does. European Commission spokesperson said the EU continued to consider Hamas a terrorist organization, would consider its response to the ruling. The Israeli economy minister called the court's decision immoral. Israel is strong and can defend itself against its enemies, but those will suffer from strengthening terrorist groups will be the Europeans themselves. That's true. You know, when you ally with the devil, you get dirty. You know, it reminds me of what happened here recently in Australia, where you had a television news reader, one of the pretty faces that's on television, go on a tweet campaign in support of Muslims in Australia and saying that, you know, Islam's not responsible for what the lone wolf did in the coffee shop, and we shouldn't consider the fact that he was an Islamic cleric. We shouldn't consider the fact that he held up Islamic slogans. We shouldn't consider the fact that his Facebook site and social postings were all mainstream Islam. We shouldn't consider the fact that this behavior is being replicated around the world by Muslims. No, let's embrace Muslims. Let's accept Muslims. It's time that we recognize that Muslims are just people too. And in Australia, among those indoctrinated in political correctness, she's seen as a heroine of morality, a heroine of enlightenment and compassion, when in fact she's aiding and abetting the devil. When in fact she's aiding and abetting a religion, endorsing, sanctioning a religion that motivated the murder of her compatriots, that will continue to do so, that is doing so around the world. She has now taken her stand, her side. Her stand is with evil. My book, it makes her evil. Hours after the ruling, the European Parliament adopted a compromise resolution supporting in principle recognition of a Palestinian statehood and the two-state solution, calling for peace talks between Israel and the Palestinians to be advanced. So their principle recognition of Palestinian statehood in the European Parliament. Go to hell, pal. Hey. Europe will be the headquarters of the Torahless One. He will find many friends. Returning to the news, Reuters is reporting that as U.S. fighter jets pound Islamic State targets, so I just love the pound. I mean, they know they're pounding. In Syria, Washington's coalition allies appear increasingly absent from the war. You see, there was no coalition. There really was no coalition. There are a bunch of OPECers that say, yeah, we'll sign up with you, it's just that we're not going to actually engage. Although President Barack Hussein Obama announced the Syrian airstrikes 3 months ago as a joint campaign by Washington and its Arab allies, 97% of the strikes in December have been carried out by the United States alone. 97%. You know, you do not have a coalition when one party is doing 97% of the work. To call that a coalition is to mislead. The data shows that U.S. allies have carried out just 2 airstrikes in Syria in the first half of December, compared with 62 strikes by the United States. That accentuates a shift that began shortly after the start of the campaign, immediately after, in September, when U.S. allies carried out 38% of the strikes. The percentage quickly dropped to around 8% in October and 9% in November, according to Reuters calculations. So the allies were 38% in the first week. In the second week, they were, the first full month, they were 8%. Third full month, 9%. And now they are 3%. U.S. officials are keen to prevent the coalition from fraying over concerns because that makes it look like we are just the only belligerent in the world. Over concerns about the air campaign's direction, some allies have long worried that the airstrikes might unintentionally bolster Syrian President Bashar al-Assad by striking a common enemy. Yeah. You know, when you're bombing the individuals that they have armed to take down the Shiite-inspired Syrian government, you're actually fighting on behalf of that very Syrian government. You know, Obama wanted to bomb Damascus, wanted to go kill Assad, and now he's got a whole bombing campaign in favor of Assad. Others in the region are also saying privately the U.S.-led campaign against the Sunni extremists needs to do more to help Sunni Muslims. Yeah, because the United States has done everything we can to ally ourselves with Iran. However, officials in the United States and the region insist that political tensions simmering within the coalition had nothing to do with the dwindling strikes. It's a question of targets. From a military perspective, the cooperation is extensive and deep, said the Pentagon liar. Two factors are at play: a decline in the overall pace of strikes. Now, it's not dealing with pace here. Decline in the pace means that anybody can play. You know, if it's really intense, the country with the biggest amount of armament would be the one that would carry the lion's share. But if the pace slows, everybody can play. So that can't be it. That's counter to what you're trying to say. And there are fewer, easier targets to hit. There never were any easy targets. No, you cannot distinguish between an Islamic State jihadist, an al-Nusra jihadist, a Hezbollah jihadist, or a Free Syrian Army jihadist. You can't tell from the air. You can't tell from a satellite. You can't even tell if you're looking them eyeball to eyeball. There never were any easy targets. We are... I just want to cover a few more insights relative to the Muslim cleric that created such bedlam in Sydney with his siege of the chocolate shop. You know, it's important for people to recognize that this Muslim was given political refugee status by Australia. That means Australia deliberately brought the disease of Islam into its own midst. Deliberately, purposefully, knowingly. And when the disease arrived, the disease began to fester and grow, perpetrating some 70 sexual assaults against women in Sydney. Murdering his own wife with a knife, burning her body. Then threatening the families of those who were parents of Australia's military. Convicted of these crimes. Last year, the perpetrator, Monis, was sentenced to 300 hours of community service for writing the offensive letters to the family of soldiers killed in Afghanistan. At the same time, Mona said his letters were flowers of advice, adding, "Always I stand behind my beliefs." His beliefs are Islam. He was later charged with being an accessory to the murder of his ex-wife. Earlier this year, he was charged with the sexual assault of not just a woman, but some 70 women in Sydney. And he's been out on bail on all of these charges. The U.S. Intelligence Service confirmed to CBS that the man was known to authorities in the country, but has not been arrested previously for extremist activity. No, killing your ex-wife is not extremist. Sexual assault evidently is not extremist. So far, he had no indications that Monis had direct contact with international terrorist organizations, except, of course, the mother of all international terrorist organizations, Islam. The the comments here are now exactly the same as what we saw in Boston, where Shenarif was called a lone wolf. It is the new deal with Islam. When a Muslim commits a terrorist act, he is always called a lone wolf. This is a one-off random individual. It's not a concerted terrorist event or act. It's a damaged goods individual who has done something outrageous. His ideology is just so strong and so powerful that it clouds his vision for common sense and objectiveness. It wasn't one-off. Islamic terrorism isn't random. It is Islam is the sponsor of 99.9% of terrorist attacks worldwide. And this idea that when a Muslim commits a terrorist act, all of a sudden he is being rejected by fellow Muslims, it's just so ludicrous. They do it all the time. That they want to celebrate the infliction of pain that Islam provides through terror, and then they want to distance themselves from the Muslim when it's obviously Islam that motivated them. Now, as for the last part of his statement is right. His ideology, which was Islam, it's not his, it's Islam, is just so strong and powerful that it clouds his vision and common sense and objectiveness. That's what religion does, and Islam is particularly effective at it. Muniz was originally a Shiite, the national religion of his native Iran, but appeared to be somehow in support of the Islamic State, a Sunni. This says extremist, they aren't. A Sunni Islamist group that has frequently targeted Shiites in its campaign. The siege Muniz initiated began around 945 in the chocolate shop. Many of those in the cafe were taken captive as they stopped by for morning coffees. Throughout the day, several people were seen with their arms in the air and hands pressed against the window, holding the black flag of Islam with the Islamic Declaration of Faith written in it. So here is not the black flag of the Islamic State, but instead the black flag with the Declaration of the Islamic Faith written in it. The Shahada translates, "There is no God but God, and Muhammad is his messenger." By the way, if you don't change the second God to Allah, then the statement is nonsensical. Not that religions ever purport to make sense, but to say there is no God but God is like saying, you know, there is no letter I but the letter I. There is no sky except for the sky. It's either there is no God but Allah, which would mean Yahweh is not God, which means that Jesus Christ, he's not God either, but for if you're a Christian, that should be offensive to you, even though you've been deceived in that regard. And Muhammad is his messenger. I tell you what, if Muhammad is the lone messenger of God, if he is even God's messenger, in fact, if Paul is God's messenger, I don't want to know him. I don't want to know a God, even if it's the God, if they've chosen Paul and Muhammad to be their messenger. Don't want to know him. If you want to associate with that kind of scum, in the case of Muhammad, a pedophile, a rapist, a man who is incestuous, a mass murderer, a man who is sadistic, a man who proclaimed that he was demon-possessed, a kidnapper, a slave trader, an avowed liar. If you want to associate with and choose as your messenger such a reprehensible human being, I don't want to know you. You know, you are reprehensible. In fact, the only kind of spiritual entity that would choose such a perverse individual to be his messenger and to tell people to follow the example of this perverted individual would be Satan. The same is true with Paul. So here he is, he's making a declaration of his allegiance to Allah and to Muhammad as the messenger. Now, by the way, if Muhammad is his messenger, the message that Muhammad delivered in the Quran is absurd. The Quran is plagiarized, it's out of context, it's out of order, it's errant historically, errant scientifically, it's immoral, it's vicious, and it's a terrorist manifesto, a declaration of war on all humankind. It has had the most negative influence on humanity of anything that has ever been conceived, with the possible exception of Roman Catholicism. So there you have it. It is considered the first of Islam's five pillars of faith. And by the way, the next four pillars of faith in Islam are all pagan. They're all derived from the pagan past of the Meccans and is similar to the Lord's Prayer in Christianity. Oh, that's funny. There is no God but God, and Muhammad is his messenger, is considered similar to the Lord's Prayer. I mean, think of the context of Yahusha's exemplar prayer. Just think of the context of it. And what it says versus this dribble. Oh, boy. I tell you what. Our schools, as they indoctrinate journalists, it's pathetic. It is pervasive throughout Islamic culture, including the green flag of Saudi Arabia. Jihadists have used the Shahada in their own black flag, yes, because you either acquiesce to that and align yourself with Satan or they kill you. Seven network television news staff watched the gunmen and hostages for hours from the fourth floor window of their Sydney offices opposite the cafe. The gunman could be seen pacing back and forth in the cafe's windows. And why didn't they shoot him? The reporter, Christopher Reason, said that the man carried what appeared to be a pump-action shotgun, was unshaven, and wore a white shirt and black cap. Yeah, he was dressing up religious. Earlier Monday, network staff counted about 15 different faces among the hostages forced up against the window. The gunman seems to be sort of rotating these people through these positions on the windows with their hands up against the glass. One woman counted that she was there for 4 hours, an extraordinary and agonizing time for her, surely, to have to stand on her feet for that long. Oh, let's accuse them of torture. At some point, five people escaped their captivity. When we saw that rush of escapees, we could see from up here, this vantage point, that the gunman got extremely agitated as he realized five had escaped. We're never going to accuse Muslims of being good shepherds. Reason later reported that the staff brought food from a kitchen at the rear of the cafe and the hostages were fed. In the early morning hours, several loud bangs could be heard. Commandos stormed the building, and a short time later, the situation was resolved. The man, of course, who was killed because he saw an opportunity to storm the gunman. It cost him his life. But he did what no one else seemed to have the courage to do. A 10 Eyewitness News reported that it spoke directly to two hostages within this cafe who confirmed that the gunman had two demands. He wanted an Islamic State flag delivered to the cafe and to speak to Prime Minister Tony Abbott. A number of Australian Muslim groups condemned the hostage taking in a joint statement and said their flag's inscription was a testimony of faith that has been misappropriated by misguided individuals. Bull. And they know it's not true. Muslims are trained to lie. It's part of their religion. Rather than agree with Yahweh, who says you shall not consistently bear false witness. The Muslims, based on the Quran and Hadith, are encouraged to consistently bear false witness, to lie all of the time. And they do. It's one of the reasons why there's no vibrant economy in the Muslim world. You can't build a vibrant economy when there is a no consequence for lying. And the fact is that it's not a few misguided individuals, but hundreds of thousands of Islamic jihadists. And when you look at the response of Muslims to Islamic jihad, and you listen to their comments when they're polled about what they desire, you find that it's the majority of Muslims who share these inhuman positions. And the testimony of faith hasn't been misappropriated. The folks like this are the best Muslims. They are the ones following Muhammad's example. It is sad when immediately after Islam exposes itself, the media throughout the world joins with Muslims to obscure the evidence. No one should ever consider the truth. They're much harder to mislead. They do. CBS News security correspondent, which means that he is someone that is sold out to political correctness and would never say anything that was in opposition to coexist, said it's almost the prototypical, almost the prototypical type attack that we believe lone wolves to be capable of. He said it appeared to be the most dangerous type of threat to try to prevent, end quote. Prototypical of a lone wolf. Gee, did this lone wolf hold up a sign that said, free the wolves? Did he put up a sign in the window that said, the wolf is a god, there is no god but the wolf? Did he say that the wolf was chosen as the messenger of the wolf? Did he ask for the flag of Wolves United? Did he promote himself? Did he have a personal agenda? No. 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 Everything he said and did reflected the fact that he acted in the name of Islam, on behalf of the messenger of the Islamic God, Muhammad. That makes him about as lone as 1.5 billion people are lone. It is a prototypical attack of Islam, not the prototypical attack of a lone wolf. The most dangerous type of threat to try to prevent. They're claiming that because how do you know what a lone wolf's going to do? How do you predict a lone wolf? How do you even acknowledge a lone wolf? There are no lone wolves. It's Muhammad. It's Islam. Read the Quran. If you want to prevent Islam from continuing to kill, read the damn Quran. Recognize that Islam is criminal. Quarantine it. That's how you prevent Islam from attacking. Counter-terror law enforcement teams later conducted dozens of raids and made several arrests in Australia's three largest cities, Melbourne, Sydney, and Brisbane. One man arrested during a series of raids was charged with conspiring with an Islamic State leader in Syria to behead a random person in downtown Syria. Do you suppose they were lone wolves too? Or do you think maybe, just perhaps, they were Muslims? There is a common denominator in all of this. One that the world wants to hide. Many of you probably know that Barack Hussein Obama's new plan to win more votes for Democrats by providing citizenship to millions upon millions of illegal aliens, that it violates the U.S. Constitution, that he had no right to do so, that he knew he had no right to do so, but didn't care because he knew he would win friends among the fastest growing minority group in America, Hispanics. Well, a federal judge found what any judge would find, that he violated the U.S. Constitution, that he had no right to do what he did. He's not a dictator. He's not king. And therefore, all of the big theatrics only showed that he has no respect for the U.S. Constitution. In May, a routine traffic stop turned deadly for a Michigan retiree. But cell phone video seemed to contradict the police accounts of the event. You know, cell phone video have been the ultimate godsend for the victims of police violence. As in other cases involving allegations of excessive force by police, a grand jury called to look into Charles Emer's death chose not to indict the officers. Yeah, there is a mythos in America, like the mythos that the military are providing a service, that police officers are on the side of justice. And so they tend to believe them, even though they shouldn't. Now a new video is raising questions about what the grand jury didn't see and didn't hear. This is a story that we will take up again in our second hour tomorrow, as we will conduct our first hour with an interview with IQ Al Rasooli and then transition to this in the second hour. For now, if you'll stay with us, we're going to turn our attention to the spiritual battle between God and Paul, the founder of the Christian religion.